Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Thursday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline studio for the Wintrust Biz Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. Are you a belief-driven buyer? Apparently, there are more of us. You know, I mean, I understand that a lot of people don't want to buy from a company who stands for things they don't stand for. But do you try to find companies that believe what you believe and then shop with them? It's a growing number. It's interesting. I think it's 59% in the U.S. last year said they were belief-driven buyers. But we actually lag behind much of the world. So we will talk a little bit later in the program with Marissa Fernandez, a reporter at Axios, about that. I'd like to start on Thursdays with Ian Schur, a senior editor from CNET.com, who joins us from the sunny West Coast, the dreary West Coast, whatever it is, it's California. Ian, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
You're in San Francisco, right?
I am, yes. Often gray San Francisco.
Well, the big football game out there tonight, I understand, between two teams that have two wins among them, so that ought to be fun to watch.
It's always a big deal when those things are happening.
Here in Chicago at Fulton Market, where there are Google offices, a number of workers have walked out. It is happening in New York City. I'm sure it's happening in San Francisco and elsewhere. Tell me about this walkout today and just how big it's turning out to be.
Yeah, this is a great example of how powerful journalism can be. So a couple of weeks ago, the New York Times published a story that was about issues of sexual harassment inside Google. And specifically, it named a couple of executives who had been accused of sexual harassment. In one case, sexual misconduct that Google's own investigation found credible. And then that executive, who was Andy Rubin, the guy who co-founded Android, which is the software that runs on everything that's on an iPhone.
So he's got Google Cloud. I mean, he's an important guy there.
He has Google Cloud. He has Tech Cloud. He is one of the most powerful people in tech. He was accused of sexual misconduct. Google's investigation found it credible, and he was forced to leave with a $90 million golden parachute.
Wow.
So and then when Google never said anything about it either. So all of these employees are walking out. They're saying Google has to be more transparent. They are demanding that it release transparency reports regularly about sexual harassment. Also, the company has a forced arbitration clause in their employment, which means that people can't sue if they want to deal with these things. That's something that the employees want to reverse. And they also want to make sure that there is more protections for people who come to Google with sexual harassment and sexual misconduct.
I know that forced arbitration issues come up quite a bit in the last year or so. And so let me explain that to you, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. So if I have an issue with my workplace and I want to sue, if I wanted to sue my workplace because of discrimination or whatever, there are a number of offices. So when you get the job, you agree to forced arbitration rather than the allowance of a lawsuit. So then you go to an arbitrator. All of that stays secret. The other people don't necessarily know what's going on. So if the cubicle mate is doing the same thing, there's not a lawsuit she or he can join. You all have these individual arbitration cases, which weighs heavily then in favor of the companies.
Right. And often the companies can choose the arbitrator, which means stacking the deck against you.
All
so
right.
This has always been a problem. And it's something that we're increasingly seeing consumer rights advocates and employees push back on, because it's something that's allowed this really nasty culture of sexual harassment to be pervasive around the country. I mean, this is where the Me Too movement comes from, is partially because of these arbitration clauses that keep it all secret. And forcing it to be public fixes this problem, a lot of people
think.
I know
a few weeks ago we talked about the Facebook war room, how they were going to take on fake ads and all fake news and all of that ahead of the election. And then there's a story in Vice this week about how they posted ads as, what, fake senators, or they pretended to be senators, and they all got through the cracks.
Yeah.
Explain that for me.
Every one of the U.S. senators, all 100 of them, Vice attempted, you know, it went through the hoops you have to go to be approved, quote-unquote, as a political advertiser, so Facebook knows who they are. But once they were past that hoop, they were able to run an ad as if they were a senator from, you know, Washington, D.C. So they could be Mark Warner of Virginia. They could be Dianne Feinstein from California. It was really bad. And Facebook says, look, you know, obviously it shouldn't have happened, which is the biggest duh in the history of mankind. But they say that, you know, they rely on us, the journalists, and the public to point these things out, which is almost worse. It's that they are abdicating their responsibility to make sure these things are protected. And as many analysts and news people have pointed out, the TV and radio people have had to make sure that this stuff is paid for by accurately for decades, but Facebook isn't following the standard.
How are their numbers? Are they suffering because of all of this stuff?
It's definitely starting to look like it's hurting them. They put out their quarterly results to Wall Street earlier this week, and they said that the revenue, so the sales of ads, went up, but the thing is that they didn't rise as much as people had hoped, and the number of people using Facebook has gone down. So it's actually in a pretty problematic issue here, where they're starting to say, okay, well, you know, the number of people using Facebook in Europe has gone down. They missed the estimates for how many people are using Facebook. It's all starting to look like maybe things are not going as well as they'd hoped, and that's especially bad because Facebook says that also people are using Facebook differently. They're starting to use the Stories feature, which is at the top of your Facebook app if you use it, and that has less advertising, less profit. So it's all kind of a really messy situation for them right now.
Ian Schur is a senior editor at CNET.com. Read more at CNET.com about these and some other great stories. Thanks for joining us today, Ian. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Yes, you too. Take care.
It is 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. In the studio right now is Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management. Our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back, Bill. Nice to see you again.
Good to be here, sir.
All right. So every week we go through this, I tell you I've been looking at my 401k. You tell me not to do it. I haven't been looking.
Good for you, sir.
It's been too hard.
Good for you.
I mean, we enter a new month, thank God, because October has just been all over the place.
Is it, Steve, October was the most volatile month in the stock market in the last 118 years.
Is that right?
All the gains for 2018 were wiped out during the month of October, and basically people are really concerned about how this is going to affect their retirement. Well, are they going to be able to retire when they want to, the way they want to?
The thing is, too, when you say volatile, I mean, there was a 5% drop, I think, was the last number I saw for the month, maybe.
Yeah, but Amazon was down 20% in the month.
So but the point is, it was up 700 points the last 2 days of the month. It's up 200 now, and it may well be down 700 tomorrow. That's the volatile. You just don't know what's going on.
Yeah, but on the whole, it's not just bouncing around. It's wiping out the gains that we've had so far this year.
Right.
And it's really affecting people, Steve.
Well, it's kind of like this is what we talk about, right? Or what you talk about is the fact that you have to protect some of this stuff. Because if you entered in the year, everything's looking great, there are early gains, and if you didn't protect it, you've lost it now.
Steve, if you're late 50s, early 60s, and you must be tired of hearing me say this, you're late 50s, early 60s, you have to start thinking differently about the market. We had a 60-year-old couple in yesterday. They've got $800,000. It's all in mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really concerned about whether they're going to be able to retire when they want and the way that they want. And it seems like everybody coming through the door now is saying, am I on the right track? Am I doing the right things? Because you can't have a big loss at that stage.
So here we are heading into the end of the year. You know, a lot of people take stock as we close out the year. I mean, is it the same sort of thing when you're looking at your retirement position?
You know, I would encourage people that before you get all caught up in the holiday season, to take a look, get a second opinion, get a portfolio review, make sure that you're in the right place before you get caught up in the holiday season. Make sure you're doing the right things. And if you need to tweak your portfolio, by God, this is the time to do it.
Part of it is there's a complacency that sets in, right, where you think, well, you know, I checked it last year or a couple years ago, and I'm in the right position. And then all of a sudden it becomes 3 years or 4 years, and you're kind of out of whack.
Well, and it's also during the holidays. you get caught up in other things, and next thing you know, it's January. Well, November of 2008 was one of the biggest down months in the history of the markets. You know, I don't want to sound like the sky is falling.
Right.
We talked about this before on air.
Can we tell you what your Halloween costume was, though?
No.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I went to Halloween as a grumpy old man.
No, businessman, you were saying.
A grumpy businessman, yeah.
Yeah.
But Steve, we work virtually 100% with folks in their late 50s to early 60s. And if you're out there and you're in that age category, I would really, really encourage you. We're going to do a special offer here in a moment. The first five callers who call in, we're going to do a complimentary, full-blown retirement plan. Second opinion will help you understand whether you're on track or not. It's a $3,000 value. We're going to do a complimentary for the first five callers.
What do I need to do that? I mean, what if I call you and say we're going to do that, what kind of documentation or what do I need to bring to you?
You're just
going to
bring your statements in, maybe last year's tax return and anything having to do with your pension, if you have one, Social Security statements, that sort of thing. And we'll sit down and help people put it all together and understand how much risk they have, what their portfolios cost them, and how they can structure an income plan for themselves, which is exceptionally important in retirement.
And you make a good point, too. It's about to get really busy with holiday stuff. So.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
Do it again in a week or so. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, a little bit later in this half hour, we'll talk to Kim Mosley. She's the president of the American Specialty Toy Retailing Association. Did you know there was such a thing? Well, they've got a day coming up a week from this Saturday. Toys R Us is gone. How about your neighborhood toy store? We'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But right now on a phone line, Marisa Fernandez is here. She is a reporter from Axios. Marisa, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. I've been enjoying some of the things you've been writing about this week and last. And one of them has to do with this idea that everything is political, maybe. And so we're starting to shop, actually, along our political views. The Edelman study showed that in 2018, there's a worldwide number, 64% of the people around the world said a company's stand on societal issues affects their patronage, which is one thing. But what jumped out at me, Marisa, is that it's a 13-point jump from 2017. I don't know if that shows we're becoming more socially aware or if we're just becoming more hyper-political. Tell me about the numbers.
Absolutely. So from that report you're talking about, in the U.S., actually, it's 57% are considered people who choose, switch, avoid, or boycott a brand based on its stand on societal issues. So that alone is actually a 10-point jump from 2017. So even here in the U.S., we're becoming more hyper-aware, as you're saying. So, you know, that can mean a lot of things. But essentially, it just means that people are buying a brand, and they want to express themselves not only about how they look, but they want to feel good about a brand that aligns with their belief system. So, you know, that, you know, positive or negative, you know, that, you know, companies are essentially seeing a positive response in choosing sides on activist issues.
Well, it used to be you would choose brands to show off your wealth or to pretend to show off your wealth, right? I mean, the North Face jackets. I live in a place where people wore, you know, they got to wear North Face.
Sure.
So that was always a reflection of your economic standing. It's shifting now a little bit, right, to reflect a view. I mean, it's not just a political standing or social standing, I guess, a hybrid of that. But it's changing mm-hmm. now to reflect your political views.
For sure, yes. And based on our reporting, you know, we definitely see this as more of a generational thing. You know, there is, you know, that corporate social responsibility that companies feel that they need to try and express. It's, you know, they don't want big bad companies coming in and, you know, they want to have companies that start to stand for something. You know, I mean, and this has been happening. This is a trend that we've been seeing over the past couple of years, you know, more. Recently, it's been, you know, things that have been political, but also there are things, you know, about the Me Too movement and also, you know, even just like kneeling for the flag.
Well, that's like the point. Right. So that's the point I want. I mean, it's easy if you're a company,
Absolutely.
If you're a CEO and to say, I'm for the good. You know, I'm for I'm for ecology, or I'm against, you know, something that's easy. But it seems to me what we're seeing are companies now weighing into deeply confrontational situations or deep divides. And the Colin Kaepernick situation at Nike is one of them, right? I mean, they're not taking a stand saying I'm for lollipops and sunshine. They're really weighing in on an issue that's dividing the country.
Absolutely. I mean, that is definitely the most recent and most controversial example that you're citing. I mean, we've seen brands relate their campaign ads and commercials all the time. But right now what we're seeing is, you know, they chose him specifically as like in-your-face kind of campaign, making him the face of everything. But, you know, we do have people who on Twitter have vowed, you know, to swear off Nike sales, you know, from their campaign. But really and truly, Nike's been having a big payout for this. You know, that Labor Day weekend, you know, they saw more than a third of their sales bump from last year.
So it was good, you know, business. So that move was a good business move for them.
That was a good business move for them. And even just last week, most recently, they released a line of shirts that had Kaepernick's last name on the back, and those sold out within, you know, like just that day. So, I mean, it's paying out for them, you know, as far as what we see, you know, based on our reporting and based on my reporting in the future, we're definitely going to see if there's going to be a big blowback. But recently, you know, it's paying off.
And the numbers also seem to indicate that people don't want safe companies, or they don't want milquetoast companies that don't take a stand, right? They're saying that these corporations should be out front taking stands on these issues.
And that's also, you know, considering, you know, if you're not a very confrontational person, I don't consider myself a confrontational person.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's definitely one thing that is really good to raise is that, you know, these companies that just want to say, you know, let our products speak for themselves, it's not going to happen anymore. You know, they're seeing some pressure to not have to stay silent any longer. Oh. And they're going to have to be like, oh, we're against this, we're for this. And, you know, right now it's positive, but, you know, we're going to see if this pays out in the long run.
All right, that may or may not be a direct line to the story you wrote about FedEx. I mean, maybe it's not a perfect example, but FedEx announcing this week that it is parting ways with the NRA. Is that an example of what you're writing about?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things is, you know, that I guess it's an opposite effect. You know, I mean, FedEx definitely and other companies have done this when there was the Parkland, Florida shooting in February. But FedEx most recently decided to not provide any more benefits for NRA members. So it's the National Rifle Association. And essentially, it's, you know, that's one of the things they're saying, all right, we're seeing a trend. You know, NRA is having huge blowback in 2018, just a bad association. And so they kind of just want to cut ties and get away from that.
Marisa, I want to ask you one more thing before I forgot, because you mentioned the U.S. number. I think it was 57%. The national world number is 64%. National is 57%. But what strikes me about the U.S. number is that we're not leading. I mean, China leads the way with 78%, then Brazil, then India, France, Japan. U.S. comes in at 59%. Why is it that they're more active about this in China than the U.S.?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, you know, because China has the highest belief in brands taking a stand of this kind of issue. Like you said, it is 78%. You know, based on reporting, it shows that, you know, it's one of those things of more of a nationalist issue in China. And I can't speak for any of the other countries, but we are seeing that the report shows that China is more nationalistic just based on its government compared to the United States. So that definitely does have a lot to do with that.
Marisa Fernandez, a reporter at Axios. Great to talk to you today. I hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Have a good one.
You bet. You too. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, please, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Remember the old days when McDonald's used to be outside the city, all the way up there over in Oak Brook? Well, they're here in the city, and we're living with it. And now that their old headquarters is empty, the city of Oak Brook is wondering what to do with the 34 acres of empty land. But there's a chunk within those 34 acres that an independent developer wants to build high-end homes on. Money, 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 money!
But since the city of Oak Brook had a bid on the space as well, there will be some back and forth before the high demand land is finalized. Oh, and by the way, if you need any help pulling back on that sweet tooth of yours, Mondelez International might be able to help with that. The Deerfield-based food manufacturer is raising prices on a number of products like Chips Ahoy, Oreos, Ritz, and Trident. Why, you might ask? Well, let's take it back to Business 101.
All right, class, when external costs like shipping goes up, somebody else has to make up that difference. Usually the consumer.
I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. In the studio is Kim Mosley, the president of the American Specialty Toy Retailing Association. Kim, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm so sad. You're not sad. Oh. Toys R Us is
gone. Well, I mean, it's the toy industry. There's some sadness.
And
sure.
Here we are, the first holiday season without Toys R Us.
Well, it's going to be okay. You know, the magic still exists, and it exists in your neighborhood toy store.
And I did not know about this organization, American Specialty Toy Retailing. So these are local shops, right?
Yes, it is. It's your neighborhood toy store. Those are our members.
Right. And you guys have a shopping day coming up, this Saturday, but a week from Saturday.
A week from Saturday, November 10th, is Neighborhood Toy Store Day. It's an opportunity to go to your neighborhood toy store. We're going to have events in the stores, specials on some of the products.
Very
family friendly.
It's very clever of you, Kim, put it before Cyber Monday and Black Friday and get those people in the stores early.
Exactly.
How's it going? Are independent toy stores, are they thriving? Are they surviving? Or what's the pulse there?
I think they're doing great. You know, consumers nowadays, they do want choices. They want to be able to shop online. They want to be able to buy at big box. But they also want to be able to shop local.
Right.
You know, when you shop local, you're supporting your local economy,
and
your neighborhood.
A lot of pressure to do that.
Absolutely.
And I was wondering, too, we were talking off the air, if, you know, now it's easy for me to buy my staples online. I can just click a couple buttons and I've got that. And that maybe allows me more time or freedom to browse in a way that I wouldn't have in the past. Is there anything to
maybe,
that?
Maybe not. You know, there's a certain amount of discovery that happens when you are hands-on in a brick-and-mortar establishment. You sort of walking the floors, picking up things. When you're at your neighborhood toy store, they'll unbox it. You can kind of play with it or let your child play with it. It's a different kind of experience.
People go to bookstores and they browse. Do people go to toy stores and
Absolutely.
Browse?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They go to toy stores and browse. They go to toy stores for different events. You know, book reading or the Easter Bunny might be at your neighborhood toy store.
Well, I hope not now. That'd be a bad timing, Kim. but you mentioned bookstores. Bookstores survived this, right?
Mm-hmm.
With a couple of ways. I mean, first of all, the big box bookstores came in, and then online and all of that. And it's the sort of sprouting from the ashes. These independent community bookstores are doing very well. Is there a parallel with toy stores?
We believe there's a parallel with toy stores and with indie retailing in general. I think indie retailing has been around even when catalogs started becoming popular, and then later when big box became popular, and now online. Consumers, of course, want choices, but I think indie is here to stay.
And so what does someone get from a small toy store, a neighborhood? I would imagine that if it's a neighborhood toy store, people aren't traveling to get there. Is that true? Or yeah.
Well, yeah, you do have to put your pants on and get in the car and go.
Well, right. But I mean, I'm not going to drive 20 miles to go to a local toy store.
No, not necessarily.
Right.
It's usually going to be your neighborhood.
It's your neighbor. So that's what it is. It becomes like a neighborhood bookstore. It becomes part of the community.
Yes. We hear from customers that they feel like that's my toy store.
Yeah.
That's my neighborhood toy store.
Are people buying more toys or fewer toys?
Absolutely. They're buying more toys.
Are they?
I think there's more choices. So their parents and caregivers are taking advantage of that.
We have a host here, Bill Leff, with Bill and Wendy. They're on every day from 10 to noon. And he's kind of a toy junkie. So
yeah.
He could probably list off all the independent toy stores in the city of Chicago. Are your numbers growing?
We believe they are. We've seen an increase in membership with our association.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, so if people want to take advantage of this next Saturday, the 10th.
Yes.
What do they do?
You can come to our website, astratoy.org, and put in your zip code and find the toy store near you.
Are you guys locally based?
Yes, we are. We're right here in Chicago.
We should check in again before Christmas.
Yes, please do.
Kim,
we'd love to.
Kim Mosley, president of American Specialty Toy Retailing Association. So that's where the Astra comes from. Nice to see you.
Thank you.